Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Welcome to this edition of the Sunday Spin for June the 17th, 2018. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Welcome to our weekly look at the world of politics and policy as we take you from the fifth floor of City Hall to the second floor of the State House and all the way out to Washington, D.C. So time to grab that Sunday paper. Get that cup of coffee. You may not want it so hot this morning, and we'll do our best to get your week off to a good start. Well, this is my last day inside Tribune Tower. Chicago Tribune has already moved out, and now this is the last time that I'll broadcast from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue in Tribune Tower as WGN Radio makes its full move across the river to an outlook overlooking the river on Wacker Drive. It's been an interesting process to move, and as moves always do, it didn't go exactly the smoothest. The computer at my newspaper was down for the first 3 days. So, but, you know, it's on to the future. And next week I'll be joining Dave and Andy at our radio overlook instead of talking by remote. And I'm sure by then you guys will have all the bugs worked out of the system, right?
Well,
sure we will, yeah.
Maybe. We do have liftoff from the sports studio this morning, though.
Yeah.
Andy is there.
Yeah, I'm here.
Running.
I went up to check on you. And
I was tired of being alone, you know? I mean, It was scary and very eerie up there.
It's dark and dingy.
It is very eerie. I actually made one quick stop this morning to see the fourth floor Chicago Tribune newsroom today.
Did you take a picture?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I would like to see that.
Yeah, it's empty.
Yeah, a hubbub of activity.
No desks. I mean, it's just...
Wow. Oh, really? The desks are gone, too?
Yeah, all the desks, the cubicles, all gone.
Wow.
Very, very eerie sight this morning. Wow. So I can feel for you, Andy, about what you must have been feeling last week up by yourself up there on 7.
Yeah. But, I walked into the hallway and just screamed. Just because I could.
But the ironic thing is isn't the first time it's ever happened.
Yeah, it's probably true.
If Andy screams and he's alone, is he making any noise?
I was making noise, but there was no one there to hear it.
I mean, the new digs are great over there.
Oh, these are beautiful.
It's beautiful over here.
Yeah.
What a difference today compared to last Sunday when I couldn't see out the window due to the rain and the fog. Now we have a tremendous, very warm sunrise.
Yeah, I'll tell you, this morning, it was very still. And so that humidity, you could even feel more ratcheted up just because there wasn't even a breeze. And it was 80 degrees, you know, at 5 o'clock this morning. And we're under an excessive heat warning, I believe.
Yes, an excessive heat warning, and it runs through tomorrow night. Also an air quality alert. When things get this hot and humid and we have heat indices of 100 plus, well, you're going to have the air quality alerts and the excessive heat. So if you have respiratory problems, perhaps it's best to stay inside today.
Yeah, I agree. And if you're outside, plenty of fluids.
Oh, yeah.
Hydrate.
Water.
Yes, water, exactly. Fluids. Yes, yes. Well, it's going to be so different. There's no tree of knowledge over at the new place, and I'll miss some of the tourists that are out here on Michigan Avenue, but actually just the other day, I was traveling my 29 CTA stretch limo to work, and there were some tourists on the bus, and one of them was remarking at State and Madison Street, "Oh, look, there's a Target. Let's take a picture."
Oh, man.
And then
little do they know that that's one of those historic.
Wait. You don't spoil.
Okay.
You're playing spoiler here.
Okay.
So then someone explained to someone else that, this other person works at a Target back home and just wanted a picture. But as we were going by, then one of them said, "Wow, what nice doors it has."
All the better to open for you.
And it's just, you know, Louis Sullivan has got to be just, you know, spinning right now. Yeah, yeah. I just almost
no one explained
it
to them, I guess, that that was an eminent historic structure.
Oh, I don't think it would have done any
Wouldn't
good.
Have done any good.
No, it's a Target to them, yeah. You know. It's just another Target to us, right?
Mm-hmm. Well.
Except the history behind the place. And then, as we traveled further, there's Macy's. Isn't that fantastic? And it's, again, it's like you're missing the whole history of Michigan Avenue, or State Street, rather, and the shopping history experience. It's you got Google now. Crazy.
Well, I guess now is a good time to tell you that I have made arrangements, Rick, for someone that you always talked about that stood outside the Tree of Knowledge and serenaded people with music. I have made arrangements that he was now going to be relocated.
Johnny Six Notes.
He's going to be relocated outside a very prominent building on Randolph Street.
That's okay, because that very prominent building where the Tribune is located, the newspaper, has multiple
entrances.
So that's just fine.
I'm kidding.
Oh, man. You're going to make me start acting like Phil Mickelson in the U.S. Open yesterday.
What a temper tantrum, huh?
Yeah.
Very unlike him.
It was his birthday, too, yesterday.
I mean, by now I think everybody knows the story about he was putting, the ball rolled by the hole. It was going to continue rolling and probably roll into a bunker. But while it's rolling, he went over and hit it again the other way.
Yeah.
And
Two-stroke penalty.
He took a 10 on the hole. I mean, he's not really in contention.
No, he's one shot out of last place.
There you go.
Yeah.
I will tell you, I'm kind of torn about how they trick up the course.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, too, because yesterday, I just told you what happened with Dustin Johnson. I mean, he shot a 7-over for the round yesterday, and the USGA actually issued an apology to the players yesterday.
I did not know that.
For how tough the course played.
Really?
Yeah, it was a lot to do with pin placement, and
Well, the pins were all crowned,
yeah,
pretty much.
And you know, obviously they do this on purpose. They try to choose courses that are going to, I don't say trip them up, but to try to make it at least an experience for for the viewer to kind of sympathize or empathize with. And I think they try to make these courses very tough, because these golfers are so much bigger and stronger, and they can hit the ball a mile. And sometimes it's not about how far you can hit it. It's about crafting shots and creating shots and shaping shots is what they call it on the tour. And, you know, it's difficult with those greens, the way they funnel back toward the back all the time. And you have a difficult pin placement, and it's over.
Yeah, well, and just because you landed on the green
doesn't mean you're staying.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it was fascinating to watch. And But I could not imagine ever trying to play that course.
Hills. The 10 kind of made me feel good about my game. But
yeah, right, exactly.
But that was, you know, that's an aberration as far as Mickelson is concerned. The thing that shocked me about it was the reaction of the announcers,
which I was not listening.
They were puzzled. I'm like, what's he doing? Because, you know, it was obviously rolling still.
Right.
And it just seemed like he was so frustrated by that time that the course got the better of him, and is, you know, he just lost his mind for a second.
Well, and it was, well, as he said afterwards, that he, you know, he was tired of going back and forth, and it was easier just to take the two-stroke penalty and move on.
Just to hit it and go to the next hole.
Yeah, because I can't really take an X like you and I can.
No, DNF, did not finish.
Right, that's not allowed in the game, but So that was interesting. Another great win by the Cubs over the Cardinals.
Nice little comeback there as well with Jason Hayward. How about that? Another home run. The guy's hitting well, and it's not the little bloops that were going over the last couple of years. These are hard contact hits, and Addison Russell with a homer as well. And it's never a bad thing when the Cubs beat the Cardinals.
No, it's always there's nothing better than flying the W after a Busch Stadium contest.
Absolutely right.
And I think Hayward's homer was like a 91-mile-an-hour pitch. I
mean, the exit velocity was incredible on it too. I'll look up the complete details on that, but that's what I mean. He's actually hitting the ball much more squarely. I know it sounds really stupid to say when it's a round bat and a round ball, but that's the term. So he's doing a whole much better. I don't know if it was the change in hitting coaches or just a little more comfort or the fact that he can opt out after next year. I don't have any idea, but Cub fans don't care really.
No. And Sox still, frustrating.
It's frustrating, but you know, what's going on obviously is this youth movement here, and Lucas Giolito has got to figure out a way to be able to close out innings. And it seems like the second time around in the batting order is when he really struggles, and it's not really clear exactly why he is struggling so much to close out innings. First of all, the home runs he gave up were two outs, and it's frustrating. He's like a little bit of an enigma right now, but you know, you look at it really, and he did keep his team in the game. He gave up the five runs, but they were able to come back to tie the game at five,
right.
And a little fluky situation on a bunt attempt that was bunted in the air, but it was between the catcher and the pitcher. Pitcher dives to try to make the play, and it pops out of his glove, and that kind of led to a couple of runs, and that's what you kind of get these days. But you always find a silver lining in the fact that they were able to come back. They were down 5-0 and came back to tie the game at five.
No, absolutely, and they deserve credit for that. And you know, that is the kind of thing, despite the loss, those are the things you build on.
Those are the things you look for, because you know, Renteria is one of the most positive human beings I've ever been around in my life. I've known him for almost 10 years now. He was with me in San Diego. He was our bench coach there when I was working for the Padres. And this guy did not let anything flap him. I mean, what you see in the media is what he really is. He's just that positive a guy. And I think that that's infectious with a group of players that are young and some that have some experience, that they realize he's not going to let us quit. So let's go ahead. We may as well tie the game. We may as well go ahead. You know,
exactly,
what the heck? You know?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Dave's here to keep us up on all the news. Andy has the latest sports. Producer Casera's here to field your phone calls at 312-591-7200 is our phone call today. You can text us there. We're on Facebook at facebook.com, The Sunday Spin. We're on Twitter at symbol Sunday Spin. And engineer Bob is looking for that last empty box to fill. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNradio.com. You can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now, The Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and on our last day here in historic Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue, President Trump saying that basically he hates this policy of separating immigrant parents from their young children. It's, you know, here it's Father's Day, and we have a policy of separating young children from their immigrant parents under a zero-tolerance, basically administrative action that was undertaken by the Trump administration. Washington Post noting that President Trump calculating he will gain political leverage because of this controversial policy. Trump said he would not change the policy unless Democrats agreed to his other immigration demands, including building and funding a border wall, tightening the rules for border enforcement and curbing illegal entry. And that's the policy that he's established. And he's been out there saying, well, it's the Democrats created this law that allows for this separation. But there is no law. That there just flat out isn't any law like this. And the last law that might even affect this kind of policy took place under George W. Bush's administration. And even the Bush administration, just on moral grounds, said that they were not going to separate families. Remember, I mean, it's Father's Day. 2,000 children have been assigned to basically immigrant detention facilities on the border, 2,000 children since May. Something to think about on this Father's Day. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio in historic Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. For the last time. Last week was dominated by the historic meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korea's dictator Kim Jong-un. But what did the U.S. get out of it? Well, nothing concrete, nothing verifiable. But the U.S. is stopping its war games with our allies in Southeast Asia. Among the techniques that Trump used to converse with Kim was a Hollywood-type movie trailer about what's possible in North Korea. Here's a segment of that.
7 billion people inhabit planet Earth. Of those alive today, only a small number will leave a lasting impact. And only the very few will make decisions or take actions that renew their homeland and change the course of history. History may appear to repeat itself for generations, cycles that never seem to end. There have been times of relative peace and times of great tension. While this cycle repeats, the light of prosperity and innovation has burned bright for most of the world. History is always evolving, and there comes a time when only a few are called upon to make a difference. But the question is, what difference will the few make? The past doesn't have to be the future. Out of the darkness can come the light. And the light of hope can burn bright.
That's from the Hollywood-style trailer that the President of the United States showed to the North Korean dictator, Kim Jong-un. We're going to switch things locally now, and joining me on the phone is Democratic State Senator Dom Harmon from Oak Park. He's the President Pro Tem of the Illinois State Senate. Senator, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me. If I'd known it was the last show from Tribune Tower, I would have gotten up earlier and driven downtown.
I see. I was trying to, I thought I had that encouragement for everybody, but, yeah, kind of a very interesting day here as, things are partly moved over to our new location. Things are partly still here. But it's going to be quite a day as we leave Tribune Tower. I wanted to have you on, Senator, about this bill, Senate Bill 336, which basically would allow the use of medical marijuana as an alternative to opioids. And I'm curious, one, because it seems like under the current issue of allowing medical marijuana, we're seeing delays in processing and delays of allowing people to use medical marijuana for treatment.
We are, and fortunately we were able with this bill to do more than just create a pathway for people who would otherwise be using opioids. Working closely with the state agencies that run the medical cannabis program, we propose changes that should dramatically streamline that and get patients the medicine that they need much more quickly.
What was there any explanation of what these kind of backlogs were on fingerprint background checks, those kinds of things in the current program?
There were a couple of things. As every state agency will claim, poor mouth. They said they just didn't have the resources to do it quickly. They did attribute much of the delay to the requirement that people submit fingerprints and go background checks. And the Department of Public Health was quite candid with us. They've almost never turned someone away because of the results of those tests. So at their suggestion, we eliminated that requirement for all participants in the medical cannabis program, those seeking an alternative to opioids, as well as those with one of the 41 articulated conditions that allow participation in the program. We're also allowing people, once they've applied for the regular program, to take the receipt as a provisional permit and go to a dispensary having applied. So instead of waiting 3 or 4 months, they'll be able to participate immediately while their permanent permit is being processed.
Obviously, a lot of concern about opioids and the overdose issue, and this would seem to be medical marijuana would seem to be a basically a kind of a no-brainer given what is going on in the current atmosphere of opioid abuse.
I agree, and I was pleasantly surprised by the reception from my colleagues in the General Assembly. This started a little over a year ago when we had a hearing in the Senate from patients who, using medical cannabis, were able to dramatically reduce or altogether eliminate their use of opioids. So we started down this road, and it's true, the opioid crisis is enormous, but it's also affecting every community in the state and the country. It doesn't respect any artificial dividing lines we erect. It's a problem in the city, in the suburbs, in the exurbs, in rural Illinois. It's a problem for black, brown, and white people. It's a problem for rich people and poor people. It's a problem for Democrats and Republicans. So we had broad support across both caucuses in both chambers, and we're able to put together a really good bill.
Are we as a state doing enough to combat the opioid, I'd say, epidemic?
I'd say not up to this point. No, we have not. But we're starting to, and this isn't the only effort. The Attorney General is pursuing litigation against some of the opioid manufacturers. I think when this story is written, in hindsight, we will see just how pervasive the problem was, and that there will likely be ingredients of profiteering and some reckless disregard for the well-being of the people that are being served.
Well, I mean, when you look at some of the figures, too, like 80% of Illinois drug overdose deaths in 2016, they're opioid-related.
That's right. And opioids kill more people than car crashes. Opioids kill more people than handguns. The statistics are stunning.
What is the status of this bill, by the way?
The bill passed, but the Senate and the House amended it and sent it back where the Senate heard. It is on its way to the governor in the ordinary course of our sending all of our bills from May to governor in June. I believe it will be in his hand shortly.
And do we have any, I mean, and it passed with overwhelming support.
It did, and bipartisan support. We worked very well with the agencies that administer the program, and that participation, I hope, is indicative of the administration's posture, but Governor Rauner has been a reluctant supporter of the medical cannabis program generally. So we're keeping our fingers crossed that he will see, on balance, combating the opioid crisis is more important than any dogmatic concerns about medical cannabis.
Well, and that's kind of why I asked the question, because, and you touched on this, I mean, in efforts in the past to kind of expand the qualifying illnesses that would be that people could get use medical marijuana for treatment, the administration has been very reticent to do that. It's frankly, you know, sometimes by court order that things get covered by it, and there just seems to be that general reluctance on the administration side.
I would agree with that perception. I have not had any conversations directly with the governor. I was very pleased once I began negotiating directly with the Department of Public Health and the Department of Financial and Professional Regulation that they were as open and willing to make bold changes to improve the program. So, again, it's a tough issue for some people. I think it is becoming less and less difficult for the overwhelming majority of my residents. We have not had any backlash. We have one of the best programs in the country for medical cannabis. We really are. We did this well. So I think that this expansion, and it's important for other states where chronic pain is a condition for which one can receive medical cannabis, have seen a significant reduction in opioid use. We don't have that in Illinois. We're not proposing that, but instead, by focusing on an alternative to opioids, we hope to reach a big chunk of the same population.
We're speaking to Democratic State Senator Don Harmon of Oak Park. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in historic Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. For the last time, joining me on the phone, Democratic State Senator Don Harmon from Oak Park, the Senate President Pro Tem. Senator, we've talked on this program the last couple of weeks about the end of the spring session in May, adjournment on time, and passage of a budget. And I guess I wanted to ask you, in your view, finally getting a budget and bipartisan agreement on a budget and a budget signed, is that any indication that things may have returned to some normalcy in this state?
I wish it would. The budget we passed was balanced, bipartisan, and boring, but the process which got us to that budget was quite unusual. This was a legislatively driven budget. Democrats and Republicans in the General Assembly said enough is enough. We're going to work together and we're going to reach a compromise. Nobody got everything they wanted, but this is the first time in my 16 years in Springfield that almost everybody voted for the budget. It wasn't a partisan budget. And I think that's an important breakthrough. But, you know, typically a budget is driven by the governor, and the governor's office is much more involved in the crafting of that budget. This was a legislative budget, and I'm proud of the General Assembly for recognizing the need to not drift into the summer again.
But people have described it to me as actually kind of a bottom-up driven budget, that this was a, you know, more of the rank and file driving the process rather than the traditional four legislative leaders and the governor.
Very much so, and it was a byproduct, I think, of the budget process we went through last year, which really was pushed over the finish line by rebellious rank-and-file legislators, particularly House Republican legislators who stood up to the governor and said they were going to negotiate with Democrats to reach an agreement. I would say in this case, the legislative leaders were involved, but were very deferential to the rank-and-file budgeteers and members interested in the budget to put together the broad contours. The leader stepped in and at the end to hammer out the final details. But I'm really proud of the General Assembly. It worked the way it was supposed to work.
I'm curious about, basically, we have this budget, and it's built in with the revenues from the tax increase that was approved a year ago. And despite that, we still hear Republicans, including Governor Rauner, vilifying this tax increase. I mean, is there a bit of incongruity there?
There is some cognitive dissonance, no doubt. This budget spends every dime of the tax increase. It spends it responsibly. It still leaves many needs unfilled. But I don't know how anyone can say that we could roll back the tax increase and still pay for the services people expect the state to provide. The math just doesn't work. We made some deep cuts in order to get to this balanced budget, but we spent all of that revenue, and we did, again, we spent it responsibly.
One of the things in this budget, too, is basically, I think it's $25 million more for higher education, but yet that's that doesn't even get us back to where we were pre-budget impasse. And it just seems, you know, the idea of trying to restore higher education is going to take a long time.
It is, but it's one of the most critical missions. And the way we budgeted for higher education this year is important. There were, not only was it a modest increase for the first time in my memory, we have been cutting higher ed for years, but it was targeted, and there were two programs, the Monetary Award Program, the MAP grant, which is one of the key ways we get Illinois kids into colleges, the first generation kids who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford college. It's typically been a one-year program that students could renew, but it created a degree of uncertainty. So we've made it a four-year program. Once you qualify, you can expect that you'll be qualified for all 4 years. The second is the new AIM High program, which is in part a merit-based program aimed at keeping Illinois students in Illinois colleges and universities. And it's not so much that Illinois is losing population to other states, it's that we're not attracting people into Illinois because of all of the naysaying that's been going on in our state. And making sure we keep Illinois kids here, but also start to attract students from out of state to Illinois colleges once we've stabilized higher education is going to be critically important for our long-term vitality.
Yeah, because, I mean, we know the horror stories involving, you know, attendance of new students coming into places like SIU, Carbondale, Western Illinois, Eastern Illinois, all through that period of uncertainty caused by the budget impasse. And, I mean, people are looking for some certainty.
Without a doubt. Businesses, students, families, everyone wants certainty and predictability. That's what the state can offer when we do our jobs right.
In this ever unpredictable state, that's for sure. Democratic State Senator Don Harmon from Oak Park, the President Pro Tem of the Illinois State Senate, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be with you.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in historic Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue for the very last time. We were talking earlier about the summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un of North Korea, and the question keeps reoccurring, what did the U.S. get out of it? CBS News' John Dickerson asked South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham about that, and here's what Lindsey Graham had to say.
The president said, and I'm quoting him here, they, meaning North Korea, have given up a tremendous amount with this agreement. What have they given up?
Nothing yet. This is an agreement in principle. Number one, congratulations to President Trump of bringing this about. This is a historic opportunity to end the Korean War, get North Korea to give up their weapons and missiles that threaten us and the world in return for security guarantees and prosperity. I hope it happens, but there is no agreement. And one thing I would tell you, John, is if there is an agreement, it must come to Congress for our approval.
That's Republican Senator Lindsey Graham. Trump himself said he believes that Kim will act to denuclearize North Korea, but Trump also acknowledged that he might be wrong.
I think, honestly, I think he's going to do these things. I may be wrong. I mean, I may stand before you in 6 months and say, hey, I was wrong. I don't know that I'll ever admit that, but I'll find some kind of an excuse.
Now that's the President of the United States. Joining me now on the phone is Republican State Senator Bill Brady from Bloomington. He is the Illinois Senate Republican leader. And Leader Brady, happy Father's Day.
Well, happy Father's Day to you and to all of your fathers who are listening.
And I hope there's plenty of them out there today. Because it's
sure there are.
It's a little bit warm outside right now.
I was outside earlier. I came in to the air conditioning to do the show.
There you go. There you go. Too bad we couldn't have you here up at the Tribune Tower for the last day of WGN Radio. But thank you so much.
I was listening to my colleague Don Harmon earlier, and I agree with him. I wish I would have been aware of that. I would have made the effort to be in Chicago versus Bloomington.
Well, nevertheless, it's good to have you on the show. if you were listening, we kind of closed out the segment with Senator Harmon kind of talking about issues revolving around the passage of a state budget. And I don't mean to harp on it, but as I wrote in the Tribune, it seems like it took the only in Illinois could a big political election year result in almost a return to normalcy of the way things should be with the passage of an agreed to budget.
Well, I think you're right. I predicted that early on, that a lot of people said this election will get in the way of doing the right thing. And I thought that maybe the election was an opportunity we could leverage to do the right thing. I think the legislature and the governor led the way. We did that. And although there's no one would call this budget perfect, and no one say everything's in there that we need or want, excuse me. I think it is a budget full of what we need, and it is a good budget. Governor began the process by, I think, very openly saying, listen, people in Illinois need a budget. They need a balanced budget, and they need a budget that doesn't rely on further tax increases. And to his credit, we were able to achieve that.
Although, I mean, let's face it, the likelihood of an election year tax increase was very unlikely.
True, although the Democrats did it last year, which is close enough to an election year. But yeah, it is. In fact, I do applaud the governor as well for realizing that our pension system in Illinois is one of the most draining in the nation. And financially, there was a solution that could have provided $1 billion in tax relief. Unfortunately, we were unable to come up with a bipartisan compromise on that. But there's still future hope with Governor Hunter for reducing the income tax on burden on families and businesses and job growth, frankly.
Well, I know that we did in this budget make some attempts to try to alleviate some of that debt burden on pensions by offering prospects of buying out kind of future growth of pensioners' assets as kind of a lump sum kind of payout. Are you confident that this will basically achieve some savings in a significant magnitude?
Well, the numbers we used were based on actuarial studies by our pension systems, I think based on what others have done. So they are as real as what we can be. Of course, predicting to 100% certainty is what actuaries try to do, but that's not always the case. So everything is a little different depending. But I was confident enough that I support, I think, the third budget in my career, that these savings will be achieved and will reduce the long-term liabilities of our pension funds.
I mean, I kind of think, you know, as I spoke with Senator Harmon about, you know, uncertainty and that kind of thing, I have to wonder if there aren't enough future pensioners or current retirees who just feel that things are so uncertain because of that growing debt in the pension system that they would take advantage of this.
Well, I think that's the case. I mean, there are some who would say, well, wait, it's guaranteed by the courts have upheld it's guaranteed. Others have said, well, systems by all definitions are bankrupt. So you've got that mix of mentality. And you've also got the idea that some people may want a lump sum cash benefit right now based on what they want. So I'm comfortable with what the actuaries have come up with, and I do think it'll help us move long-term. Anybody who does take will move us long-term to a better, more fiscally sound system.
I think when you were talking about the governor and a effort to achieve greater savings, you were talking about what's known as kind of that consideration model that actually had been proposed earlier by Senate President John Cullerton. But, I mean, there still seems to be a significant question about whether that would be constitutional or not. With the lump sum offer, it's people, I mean, to me, the consideration model means you have an option that is, I want to leave everything the way it is, which that is not part of the consideration plan that people have been talking about in Springfield. With the lump sum kind of buyout plan, there is that option that people can just leave things the way they are. Are you confident that consideration model would be upheld as constitutional?
Well, as you know, I've spent more hours than I care to think about trying to come up with a plan to protect the people who rely on the pensions and the taxpayers, only to have those plans in a bipartisan way thrown out by the Supreme Court. You're right, and which is why I applaud the governor for not building his budget on those pension savings for the Tier 1. And what he did is he said, let's pass this, and if it passes the Supreme Court's test, then we'll provide income tax relief. The budget wasn't based on it. Predicting this court has been challenging for me. Just, you know, when we simply asked pensioners to pay 2% of their pension toward their health insurance costs and work through that out, I found it difficult to understand the rationale of this court. We've got some serious financial issues, and we're trying to protect the people who are relying on the pension and health care benefits, but there's going to be some give and take. But you're right, which is why I applaud Governor Rauner on not building the pension savings on the consideration model into his budget, but saying that pass it, let's see if the court approves it. I believe it's the last thing we can do that I'm aware of that would save Tier 1 pension monies and protect Tier 1 pensioners. The court could approve.
We're speaking with Republican State Senator Bill Brady from Bloomington. He is the Illinois Senate Republican leader. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the farewell voyage of the Sunday Spin from Tribune Tower. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. And joining me on the phone from Bloomington is Republican State Senator Bill Brady. He's the Senate Republican leader, the State Senate Republican leader. Senator Brady, I'm curious as we move into kind of campaign mode, is the budget kind of the principal selling point for Republican Senate candidates, legislative candidates?
Well, I think there's really two things. One is education funding. Governor Rauner led what I think is historic and probably the most encompassing reform in the nation when we last summer agreed to an education reform spending program and funding program. But also, he has fought the lead for over $1.3 billion, I think, in new money to education funding. So that's a premise which is really important, and his ability to lead on that in a bipartisan way and the legislature grasp that is important. I think the governor does get credit for the budget and many of the good things that are in this budget. A transportation program, $500 million for the University of Illinois to do a Discovery Partners initiative, which is going to, I think, move higher education and technology in the Chicagoland area and other university campuses to the forefront of this nation. Quincy Veterans Home, the governor's been a strong advocate for veterans to this state and the challenging circumstances that have led to the loss of life of people in Quincy. The governor's been adamant about investing and protecting the lives of those folks, $53 million. So I think you're right. There are things in the budget that we didn't get, but we were able to reduce spending by, we estimate, over $1.5 billion and still passed something that was balanced. So there are good things in this budget, I believe, for Republicans at the legislative level and the Senate level and the governor to run on. It points to the fact that J.B. Pritzker's tax increase is an unnecessary burden. We can balance the budget with current revenues and, in fact, reduce revenues if we can grow jobs. And I think mostly, though, this initiative is going to be about which governor is going to lead the way to create jobs in Illinois. Is it J.B. Pritzker, who wants to raise tax rates and doesn't want to reform government? Or is it Bruce Rauner, who's got reforms for government, wants to reduce property and income taxes and make Illinois a destination for business investment and families?
Well, but one question with that, though, is, you know, with the idea of property taxes, which obviously everybody hates, and you know, you look at what...
I hate them even more now after the federal...
Exactly, with the limitations with SALT, right. But one of those issues of, even in the governor, in his proposed budget, had proposed cost shifting of pensions from school districts onto local school districts, which are local property taxes. And this kind of conundrum of, you know, cutting property tax freeze, but also cutting state taxes. I mean, there's an incongruity there about, you know, how do things get funded? If you do both, there's going to be less services.
Well, first of all, the cost shift was something that was initiated by Speaker Madigan years ago, the pension responsibilities, and we were fully funding the current obligations. It was just moving the responsibility where it deserves to be, and that is with the people who make the salaries for those folks. And so it wasn't an increased burden, in my opinion, on property taxes, because we were going to cover those costs. It was just shifting future responsibilities where it ought to be. But I think, you know, as I said, we have got to realize that businesses, take Amazon's interest in its Chicago for the second quarters, 50,000 base jobs, 120,000 ancillary jobs, 170,000 total estimated jobs. We know that Jeff Bezos halted growth or expansion because of a tax on the West Coast, and he will look at the J.B. Pritzker tax increase as a threat to his business. And I think if we don't get Amazon, it'll be because of candidate Pritzker's continued insistence that he raised tax on Illinois families and businesses. So we know that states that are growing are holding the line, not reducing taxes on families and businesses, and that's what businesses look for. We can't ignore that. And we also need the reforms that we've associated with various costs associated with operating a business in Illinois. And I think that's going to be the agenda in for legislators and for the governor's race. Do you think that the path of J.B. Pritzker and Mike Madigan are the path we want to go, or is Bruce Rauner's message, which appeals to businesses and keeping people in Illinois, better? I think it's a clear message.
Are you, when you talk about Pritzker, and we're referring to the kind of generic proposal for a graduated income tax that would tax income at varying levels, much like the federal government does? Illinois has a flat tax. Are you just fundamentally opposed to a graduated income tax on the state level in Illinois?
I am. Every state that has done it ends up hitting the middle class, and that's what I think will bear out in this election. The states that do this end up in the middle class, which is really the strongest class we needed. And it doesn't work in those states. Illinois' one benefit is that we have a flat tax, and that the legislature, you know, would have to raise it on everybody, which I think, in my experience, is puts Democrats and Republicans in a difficult position. If you can raise it just on the highest income earners and the middle class, then it's easier to do, but then it further drives those people from the state who provide jobs and pay a lot of other taxes. So I'm fundamentally opposed to altering the people. The Constitutional Convention, which implemented a flat tax, I knew that that was the best direction for the future of Illinois, and we need to hold to that. Jay Pritzker's idea of a graduated income tax hike is just, I think, wrong for Illinois, and it's proven wrong for the middle class and growth in other states.
And, well, some people do argue, though, that, you know, given the kind of change from 1970 when that was written into the Constitution, that the nature of the state's economy has changed vastly from, you know, a manufacturing economy to more of a service-oriented economy, and that
an internet-driven economy. So you're right, and there are alterations, but that doesn't mean you should take and penalize highest income earners, those who create the most jobs, to a point where they decide to move those jobs and themselves to another state. That's why the Pritzker agenda is dangerous.
That's State Senator Bill Brady, Republican from Bloomington, the Illinois State Senate Republican leader. Senator Brady, Leader Brady, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Well, I look forward to being in your new studio, and again, happy Father's Day to you and to your crew there, as well as those fathers of Illinois. So thanks, Rick. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. We'll be back with more right after this.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Happy Father's Day Sunday. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Here in the Allstate Showcase Studio, in historic Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue for the very last time as WGN moves officially over across the river, up the road on Wacker Drive, upstairs on the 18th floor, where I'll be bringing the show to you next week from the Allstate Skyline studio overlooking the Chicago River. Just want to give a quick hello to my good friend, Brian Bernadoni, who he and his family here to kind of say farewell to the Showcase studio. And thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Oh, it's wonderful to be back here in this studio for one last time. When you look out this window and you realize what a beautiful city we have and how fortunate we were to have this building for so long, a lot of good memories in this building, and I'm glad I could help be part of the sign-off show.
Well, as I mentioned to someone, there are a lot of ghosts in this building. Not all of them necessarily Casper the Friendly Ghost.
No, and you know, the thing about the Tribune Tower from the time it was built in 1922 all the way through is some of the best journalists and communicators the city's ever seen have come through this building, including you. And it's just been a great pleasure to have been a very small part of a very, very big and important civic thing.
And now progress goes on, and we'll see what progress brings to this building, as well as what progress brings to WGN Radio and to the Chicago Tribune.
Well, at least Chicago will always have Sven Gulli.
Indeed. Thank goodness. There's the obligatory Sven Gulli reference from Brian Bernadoni.
Thanks, Kenrick.
Didn't even mention the Cubs.
No, well, I think if people see the pictures from today, they'll see we're all wearing our Cub items. But again, it's a beautiful day in the city. And as I think about Father's Day, and I have my family here, and you see families walking up and down the boulevard, again, you can't help but think we live in a beautiful city.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Thank you.
Joining me now on the phone is my good friend Chris Mooney, political scientist at the University of Illinois Chicago and a member of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs with the University of Illinois System. Chris, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Yeah, my pleasure, Rick.
I wanted to kind of get your take on, and we've spoken to Senator Don Harmon earlier and Republican leader Bill Brady in the Senate. I kind of wanted to get your take of the takeaway of one of a state budget that both sides are kind of using as campaign fodder to. I'd written previously, as I mentioned to Senator Brady, that it kind of took the oddity of a major election year to bring a sense of normalcy back to the state of Illinois.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if you look at how things have progressed really in the state and in the nation in the last few years, it's kind of head spinning and, may not be over yet. So we'll see. But yeah, the fact that we've got a budget, which used to be, of mild interest to those, sort of directly involved in the legislative process, but now is, it's like everybody in the state holding their breath to see if they're going to get it together. One more time, that's a whole different world. But, for the governor, I think this was crucial. He had to do it, in order to have any kind of chance for reelection. When you're the governor, you wear the collar, you're responsible, you took the job, you said I can do it, you said I'm successful at everything I've done. You can't keep blaming people forever. They do, but it's a matter of how long you blame others for your own failures, or how long can you blame others and not accept responsibility, even if they aren't your failures, and even if they are the other person's problem. But when you're in charge, and you got to accept responsibility. So he had to get this done this year, and he did it by completely abandoning the approach that he took in the previous 3 years.
Well, the turnaround agenda.
Yeah, all the stuff that he said he wanted, all the sort of union busting moves and other kind of reforms. He just gave 100% up on those. So those in the Republican Party who were hoping for him to succeed in this, he hasn't succeeded. He's failed 100% by his own terms, And so the question is, are they going to be satisfied enough with him and get excited to say, well, yeah, he couldn't get it done in 4 years, but 8 years for sure. Are those people going to get excited and come out in November? And then, of course, on the other side, you've got virtually an unknown quantity and J.B. Pritzker. And the other guy's got enough money to define him the way they wish. And so we're all getting ready for $100, $200, $300 million worth of negative commercials coming our way over the next few months.
I don't know that you can buy $300 million worth with the short amount of time, but certainly...
I'll sell it to them. I'll figure out a way to make it happen. If you got the money, somebody's going to do it, right?
That's true. I just don't know if there's enough time available to be able to buy that kind of an onslaught of ads. But
well, you may be right. But look what happens when they run out. When they run out of sort of legit ads, they go out and do stuff like, oh, let's write a book about somebody, like the Jeannie Ives did. Had somebody write a commissioned a book about Rauner. Last year, the IPI commissioned a movie about Mike Madigan. That's a great idea. I think 157 people saw that movie, but, they had an extra $1 million or whatever it was,
right,
so they threw
right.
it in that direction.
When I spoke to Leader Brady, he pointed out the some of the elements of the budget, including $53 million for the Quincy Veterans Home as a kind of the start to rebuild that. And that, of course, was the site of a deadly Legionnaires outbreak in 2015. And there have been annual outbreaks since. In total, 13 people have died, and dozens have been sickened by Legionnaires. And I guess I'm wondering, to me, that would seem to be the whole issue of Quincy. It could be a very major stumbling block for the governor's reelection, just because of all the things that entails.
Well, it could be, and we're going to have to see how this develops. You never really know what are going to be the major themes on these idiosyncratic things. I mean, in general, it's going to be the budget, it's going to be Trump, it's going to be the economic situation in Illinois, it's going to be CPS, other things like that. So that's something. But these are idiosyncratic, scandally kind of things that come popping up. Sometimes they have traction, sometimes they don't. This one, yeah. Dead veterans, a governor who, I don't know how hell he got out of the draft. Was it bone spurs or whatever, like the president? But he's of that generation that this is an uncomfortable situation for. It was the same thing for Bill Clinton. It was the same for a bunch of people of that generation. So he might get tarred with it. Now, on the other hand, his opponent is in the same boat. So, and J.B. Pritzker never served in the military, as I know. I know he had a brother that did, I think, or sister. But anyway, but the point is that if you don't know if these things are going to catch fire or not, and maybe it's one more little thing, maybe, sometimes it's, a particularly attractive, I don't mean physically attractive, but some kind of a person who's the face of it, right? There's a, somebody that dies and there was a particular situation that really catches you guys' attention in the media, that catches, readers' attention. They get excited about it. Or maybe it just becomes a nothing. We'll just have to see.
Well, you did have the fact that for the State of the State speech, the governor had one of the Quincy veterans in attendance and referred to him. That veteran later caught Legionella, or Legionnaire's disease, and just recently died, though not of that disease. But there's kind of, the governor was trying to put a face on, I'm with the vets and all of this, and then it was only a little while later that same vet, suffers from Legionnaire's disease.
Yeah, and it's a little disingenuous. I always felt this about Pat Quinn too. He would always go to the veterans' funerals. It's very easy to stand up and say, yes, we're with the vets, we're always with them, we're always behind them. But when time comes for you to serve, if you dig that decision in a different direction, especially during time of war, I don't know that you've got a lot of moral standing to stand with them and sort of get some political, benefit from that, in the end. So, I mean, the governor's been doing this, politicians, the president, I mean, this is obscene the way he slobbers all over the military when he scooted out of the draft, his quickest way he could get out of it after serving in military school. So, you know, the whole military thing is a little fraught for that generation. And, you get people that served like Al Gore and, the first Secretary of Defense for Obama.
John McCain.
Well, John McCain, obviously, yes. But I'm thinking of people who, weren't career military. He was a senator from Nebraska, Republican. I forget his name.
Kerry.
Anyway, pardon?
Bob Kerry.
Well, Bob Kerry. Well, he won the Congressional Medal. This was just a grunt. I can't remember his name. He was the first enlisted combat veteran, or something, to be the Secretary of Defense. It didn't last long, but. Anyway, yeah, so it's potentially fraught, but we're not, but it doesn't seem, the thing that's different now than it was in the 50s or the 60s is that a lot, most people, especially, upper middle class people don't have relatives who have been veterans. They haven't been veterans. They don't know, Uncle Joe wasn't killed in the war. In the 50s and 60s, everybody's family had veterans because everybody was involved in World War II,
right,
about one way or the other. So now it's very specialized, and it's more the work class, as the military generally has been over, represented by them in the long run, but now it's really, it's a much more specialized group and smaller group. So whether it has that broad resonance, I'm not sure.
We're speaking with Chris Mooney, political scientist at the University of Illinois Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, speaking with Chris Mooney, political scientist at the University of Illinois Chicago. Chris, I don't know if you got to hear Senate Republican Leader Bill Brady in the last segment, where he was talking about the J.B. Pritzker kind of generic proposal for a graduated income tax, but basically saying that the state is better suited to maintain with its flat tax. And I've kind of wondered if, this idea of a graduated tax coming from Pritzker and Democrats isn't kind of a darned if you do, darned if you don't situation, because he doesn't want to say what tax rates should be. He says he needs to see what the budget is before, or the state's finances are, before proposing what those graduated tax rates would be. But yet, in the absence of having those tax rates, it allows Republicans to say, well, that's just going to be another tax on you, another tax on the middle class.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a big mistake for them not to. I mean, if they're going to say, if they're going to go out on a limb and say this is what they want to do, because it's easy to manipulate this. Because you can turn it into a bugaboo. Oh, don't trust them. They're doing something with the taxes. In the end, you're going to pay more. Politicians. So he's got to be more specific in order to be credible. Because what he's got to be able to say is, look, the argument for a progressive tax is that of fairness. Is that it's fairer for some, sort of like Warren Buffett says, it's unfair for his secretary to pay a higher rate, or even the same rate, of tax as he does, because he can afford it more. And, he needs to be able to say, look, we need to sock it to the rich. That's, the Democratic line, right? I mean, they've got plenty. They get theirs. Let's have them chip more into the social good. And, he needs to be able to say something like, 98% Illinoisans will pay no tax and more tax, and, 2% will. That's what he needs to be able to say, but he can't say that without specifics.
And it, as I said, then it just opens the door for him for Republicans.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's always the case when you've got somebody like a Pritzker who's a newbie, right? He's a super rich, he'll fight candidate. Never run, he ran for Congress, but years ago, and nobody remembers that, and he'd probably prefer to forget it. But he never served before, but he's got all the money in the world, just like Brown, just like Trump, and just like, a variety of governors around the country. I think there's seven of them right now, who are these super rich guys like Rauner, never served in public office before. some do well, some do poorly. Iran actually is in terms of public popularity doing worst of any of them, and really almost worse than any governor in the country. Though popularity is not necessarily the only criteria for evaluating a governor, it's certainly when going into an election is an important one. So Pritzker is brand new. He's got no track record. So they can define him as they want. And so whenever you're a new candidate, you have to make sure you get up there in front and define yourself before your opponent does. And so this is going to be a battle between two messaging. You know, is this a fair tax process that, you know, almost every other state has and the federal government has had, you know, forever, or at least for 100 years, or is it, you know, another way for the Democrats to take your money away and you know, give it to somebody that's not you?
We'll be keeping an eye as that message develops, because no doubt it's going to be a central part of the campaign. Chris Mooney, political scientist, University of Illinois Chicago, member of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs with the University of Illinois System. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Yeah, pleasure, Rick. Good luck on the move.
Thank you so much.
So
we'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Democratic State Senator Don Harmon, Illinois Senate Republican Leader Bill Brady, and Chris Mooney from the University of Illinois. Most of all, I want to thank all of you, and I want to thank all of you for listening on this, my final day that I ever imagine I will ever set foot in Tribune Tower ever again. After, it's my 30th year with the newspaper. Not quite so long with the radio station, but, just seeing these kind of institutions progress and divide and leave this ancestral home is, kind of an emotional thing. But, it's called progress, right?
But don't worry, you'll still be able to get Frango's hair anytime you want. It is. You know what? I'm way more emotional about this last show than I thought I was going to be.
I always felt like there was going to be one more day.
I thought I was going to be Mr. Tough Guy. Who cares? It's just a building. I'm walking through this place practically in tears, and then planning.
Well, that's because your key card wouldn't work.
Well, that's never a good sign at a radio station when you show up and the card doesn't work anymore. And planning a few things, for the show today, like final things in Tribune Tower. It sounds like we're all dying. Like after today, they're going to take me out to the cemetery, and that's going to be it. We're moving buildings, that's all. So it's just our final day in Tribune Tower. But it is emotional. Historic nature of this building. I did a piece for TV that was a little bit more about that. This is an iconically Chicago place to have worked. And I'm going to miss that. I've broadcast from this building for 24 years.
How about
it? Out of this room or the other one down the hall. So it's going to be weird. But, you know, time marches on. And I was just over at the new place unpacking boxes. I'm pretty sure people stole stuff out of my boxes in the transition.
Well, it's a radio station anyway. That's what they do.
Milk duds that I had for emergency food is gone. I don't know who took it. I'm going to find you, though. But it's beautiful over there. For next week, when we start there. Actually, Steve Cochran starts tomorrow morning, but it's beautiful over there. So, you know, we just have to look at it as a new page that's turning and new exciting things to come in the future.
No, but I will miss the occasional visit of the cockroaches up on the fourth floor. That was kind of a special treat. You could tell the weather was changing.
We moved some of those in the moving boxes.
Oh, cool. Excellent.
They're coming with us.
Well, have a great show, Dean.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you.